What's going on, everybody? It's be your boy DJ Anonymous with Sports Biz Music, the podcast, episode 118. I got a special guest on the show today. I got my boy Christian Pfeiffer on the show today, man. How you doing?
Hey, man, I'm good. I'm living, trying to survive the coronavirus.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, man. How you and the family doing so far? Your business partners and whatnot. How y'all doing?
You know, everybody's good, man. It hasn't affected us. Like, I know it's affected so many other people.
Right.
I don't know. It just hasn't come close. You know, I mean, we're not the best at being social distancing right now. Yeah. I mean, my family still gets together for Easter and all kinds of stuff. Like, you're not supposed to. You know, I think we had 13 people in my aunt's house the other day. But it hasn't affected us and any of my business partners. So I'm grateful for that, man. It's been a blessing that it hasn't touched us the way it has other people.
Yeah, same over here. Easter, my mom, she had made some breakfast and whatnot. And, we trying to be social, you know, trying to distance ourselves a little bit. But, I mean, you know, me and my wife, we had to talk. Even my mom, we had a discussion about it. Like, you know, at the end of the day, we still have to do what we have to do. Like, I'm still going to work. So it's like, it's really... Like, I understand what they're trying to push, but at the same time, you know, if you have the opportunity to work, you have the opportunity to, you know, to see your family, like, you can't deny that, you know. You know, you try to set a curfew for yourself, but hey, we all not perfect.
It is what it is. Yeah, I mean, you look at me, right? So, you have 400,000 people making $4 on Spotify. So... You think about that number, that's like 1.6 million people, $1.6 million right there, right? If my math is right, I might be wrong.
You close, yeah, you right.
So, that's over $1 million sitting in the bank account waiting to be withdrawn by the artist. But if they don't withdraw it, just like a bank, that money sits in that account until it's withdrawn. And the distribution company increases their cash flow. Mm-hmm. If they want, they can invest that money. They, as long as they have the money when the artist withdraws it, they're good. Just like the bank. The bank takes your money and withdraws it, does all kinds of investments with it, does whatever they want with that money. As long as when you go to the bank, to the ATM, you swipe your card and you want your $20, it comes out, you're happy. They figure out how to make that happen. And that's the same thing that happens with distribution companies from a business aspect of it that most people don't see. Especially black-owned businesses. There's not very many black-owned distribution companies.
Right.
And so for me, I said we needed one of our own. We needed one that was 100% owned and managed by us. And so that was a big deal for me and for the community in the long run. So because now we're looking out for each other's interests. You know, we can take that type of content or that type of revenue, and I'm not using that money to invest it right now. It just sits in the account, but it increases our cash flow. And eventually, when we reach that point of having millions of dollars in revenue sitting in an account, we're now able to, you know, we're now able to use that to invest in the other black-owned businesses or our own communities or whatever else we want to do. So, I gotta check and make sure my math was right because I might have just way the hell off on that.
So, because I like to ask this question too, is like, especially for you owning your own distribution company. Does streaming make it like more viable, or does, like, you know, do you wish that, you know, you were still in that time where, you know, CDs and cassettes were still like, you know, like
relevant.
I'm sorry. What you just said, you know, is certain words I can't say at a certain time. I don't know, could think about it, like CDs was what? Some of them was like, depending on the artist, like $15 a CD. Like, streaming, you could just press play. And I remember some crazy number was like, if you stream that person's song, they only get like not even a penny. So,
yeah, it's like 0.004 something on the high end. It's like, it's really low. Yeah, it's like 0.0004 something. So, yeah, it's like 1/100,000 or 1/1/4 of a thousand. It's ridiculously low.
Right.
I don't know. And I think that both sides have more had relevance in their time.
Right.
I think back in the day, the music industry was more risky because you have to invest a lot more out to get a return. You're banking. So somebody signed you. You know, right. I signed you to my distribution company or my record label. I would have to take the money and then go out, say, you know, and spend, you know, 10 grand or more on getting CDs printed, making the CD a physical thing, right?
Right.
And now getting the CD printed, getting the cover art made, getting that printed, getting the titles on the inside to make a good-looking CD. So then, therefore, you know, you have to spend the money to go get the product out and release and then put it into the stores.
Right.
And you're hoping that this client or this artist that you have sells those products because you already are $10,000 in the hole. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So to become a musician back then was a lot harder. You had to go through more bullshit to get your stuff out there. So you got music that is, that, you know, you're praying it sells. Mm-hmm. You're praying it goes off because you're already sold. Today, it's nothing like that. To distribute music, DistroKid is $20 a year.
Mm-hmm.
TrueCore is $9.99 a CD or whatever it is. You know what I'm saying? So now, less risk on the back end, but yeah, you're not going to get that bulk of revenue. So yeah, you have the less risk today and more music can be pushed out. Well, back then, you know, you had higher risk, but mm-hmm. more reward in the long run. I kind of like the way it's structured today. That allows people to express themselves easily, allows music to be reachable, you know. Even back in the day, if you wanted your music to be heard, you still had to go get a tape recorder and put it up in your room and play the beat out loud. You had, it was low quality, it was shitty. Today, it's like, if you want to be heard and you think you have talent and the ability to grow,
right.
This is how easy it is to do it. Make your music and get out. Now, that allows crappy music to be released into the world.
That's my thing.
You know, it sucks, but at the same time, who are we to say what's crappy and what's not? You know what I'm saying? Like, so everybody, we have freedom. Everybody now, today is a freedom era. We have the ability to get out there and do what we want. And if we want to make music, if I decided tomorrow I wanted to make music, or you decided tomorrow that you mm-hmm. wanted to release an album, you know, you can do it at the snap of a finger if you have the relationship to get the beat and all that other stuff. As far as the music pricing, it's not, to me, it's not a horrible thing. You know what I'm saying? Streaming has given a music outlet to independent artists today where they don't have to sign a record deal.
Right.
Streaming has given people a way to make money without selling their souls and doing what they used to have to do in the past. I mean, it is an easy way to make money while you sleep if you make good music and you know how to market yourself. So, I mean, I have clients that are bringing in thousands and thousands of dollars a month off of their streaming. You no longer, you should tour, but as an independent artist, you don't necessarily have to tour if you can get your streaming numbers to a point that where it makes sense. You know, so I like today's model. I think it just allows more freedom for more artists. It allows people to do what they want, in a sense. So I like today's business model. I wish the numbers could be a little higher, but looking at it from a business standpoint, Spotify can't pay more. Spotify is a subscription-based thing, you know, and if I'm paying $15 a month, you know, and I listen to, you know, I don't know, say a thousand, I listen to music all day long. Mm-hmm. And we get off the call, I'm going to put music on. So if I listen to, you know, 500 songs in a month, you know what I'm saying, we're decreasing their profit margins. And they still got to pay out those royalties to the artists.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I get the business model from the back end. How long do I know until it's going to change? I mean, I don't know when it's going to change. You know, I have a new business model because I think that Spotify, iTunes, they will eventually implode. I think that the amount of streams is going to reach that point where they're either going to have to raise their subscription base, or they're going to have to decrease the amount that they pay the artist, and eventually neither one of them is going to have it. Like, I'm not paying $20 a month. That's period.
Right.
You're going to go for 15, I'm not having it. I'll go do something else. the artist, hey, you pay them less than 0.0004, they probably not gonna have that anymore. They might as well release their stuff their own way on their own website or something. Right. So it's gonna implode, and somebody's gonna need to create a new business model that makes it better for both sides.
But you know, I'm glad that you said that, is because, you know, out of all the streaming services, Spotify is the more, I guess, relatable to everyone. But even in the streaming services, as far as, like, you know, Netflix and Hulu and all that, you know, I always told people that, you know, history is going to repeat itself. And you see, like, a lot of artists, you know, they starting to come out with different vinyls, and I heard cassettes coming back. And I was telling people that, you know, the reason why I still have cable is because I feel like it's going to get to a point where Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime and all these streaming services, just like how you said, that they may not have that much money to pay, you know, these creators and stuff. And it's going to get to a point where, you know, a lot of the creators, because you see it now, majority of the creators who created shows on Netflix or Hulu or whatnot, they move into HBO, they move into Showtime, they move into Stars, because, you know, and realistically, that's where the big money is at. And I was telling people, like, you know, you can't, you know, don't tell me this is the future, just tell me that this is the now, because the future could change. You know, 10 years from now, you never know. Artists may get to a point where, you know what, I either want to go back to CDs or just sell them on USBs. You know, like, I feel like USBs on the low key is going to be like the next big thing, because you see in the cars now, cars and vehicles, trucks and everything, they having so many, like, you know, the USB inputs and whatnot. So that's just me when it comes to, like, like the whole tech world.
No, I see potential in the USB market, for sure. It's, you know, we go back to that business sense of now saying, all right, we got to buy X amount of USBs. Luckily, the process of buying them and putting music on there can be done by anybody.
Right.
You know, so, you know, I think it has a prominent in a good, it could have a good comeback, especially with people doing their mixtapes, you know, stuff like that. Putting mixtapes out on USBs and, yeah, as these cars begin to carry, my car definitely has USB now. Mm-hmm. So, I see that. That's a good, you know, thing to bring up. You know, as far as, like, Netflix and stuff go, they're different than music. Mm-hmm. You know, Netflix usually will buy out the license for a film mm-hmm. first. So they'll say, like, hey, we're going to give you, you know, $500,000 up front for your film
mm-hmm.
and then give you a small royalty percentage on the back end. You know, so if the film does well, then we'll pay you out or whatever. But sometimes they just say, look, we're going to buy your film out for 3 months to have a license so that it's only on Netflix. And then after that 3 months, we'll give you your shit back, and then you can go do whatever you want with it at that point.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So they don't pay royalties the same way Spotify does. Their contracts are a little different. So Netflix and Hulu, that's why you got so many of them all popping up right now. Like, we have new ones that are coming up, the Quibi and all the other
Apple
ones.
TV and all that.
Yeah. It's because those things are, they're good business models.
Mm-hmm.
You know, subscription-based, you get people to pay $9.99 a month, you get 1 million people to do that, well, you just made this much, so now all you got to do is give a percentage to keep the content flowing in or whatever.
Right.
Easy. You know, and they got way more than 1 million. They got like 100 million people on there at $9.99 a month. So let's not do, you know, that's just the cool part about that is that you're not really losing, you know?
Yeah, you know. So, yeah, it's like, you know, I just see Netflix as like the, all right, you coming in independent, but then, you know, I'm like, all right, cool, I got this, let me go to the bigger boys, like the HBOs and stuff. I don't know. I just feel like, you know,
there's levels. There's definitely levels to the shit. You know, there's levels to being on different platforms. HBO Go and all that. That's a harder platform to get on. So yeah, getting on there is a big deal. You know, getting on your Stars and all that other stuff. But I don't sleep on Netflix though. Netflix is they're becoming a growing leader.
Yeah.
You know, actually, they kind of lost it, but they're coming back with a lot of other things. So the Netflix original series and stuff like that is all cool. I like that a lot. Actually, I just started my own film distribution company as well.
I was about to ask you that. Was you wanted to do that?
I haven't announced it or launched it yet. But you can literally go to the website. It's up. It's just not filled in with all the content we have yet. I'm still getting the content, and then we're creating original content as well. But the unique part about it is we're putting the revenue stream back in the creator's hands. Mm-hmm. So it's not just for films, it's also for good music videos. So say an artist makes a music video and they don't want to put it on YouTube, mm-hmm. because you only pays you $1,100 per billion streams.
Right.
Well, you can put it up on Filmco, set your price at a 99 cent rental rate,
right.
and now for all your fans, go watch my music video for 99 cents. They get to watch it for 24 hours, or they can buy it for $5.99, and now you're able to increase your immediate revenue all through a digital marketing source. You know what I'm saying? So it's giving the artist the ability to make their money back again, you know, and it's, of course, going to take a little bit of a transition, but if you have, like myself,
mm-hmm.
if I'm making some type of video content that I say, hey, it's out on Indie Film Co., I probably could get 1% of my total fan base right now to go and engage with that, and that's 400 people,
So let me ask you a question, because I don't know if you're familiar with the Drink Champs podcast.
The Drink Champs, yeah.
Noriega and them. I had EFN on the show one day, and he was telling me, because I was just asking him questions. So I'm like, you know, how did y'all have them deals? Because that was they were titled Now and stuff, but around that time, that's when they just got the deal with Revolt. And I was asking him, like, how did you get all these deals? He was saying, well, you know, first we recorded audio, then we started doing video, then we was, you know, placing them on YouTube, and then they had a deal with CBS. And then with CBS, after that, Revolt gave them the, like a deal for them to stream their podcast on the channel. So, and then seeing them now on Tidal, and then you talking about your distribution, your film distribution, I have a question. So, let's say, like, for me, like, with my podcast, because eventually I want to get it more in the video, would you work with different podcasts, I guess, like, shows that's going on video and place them on the platform?
Oh, most definitely. Yeah, no, anything that's viable content, you know, it can go. You know, so I was using music videos and independent films, but I'm talking about skits, short films, any of that, you know, podcasts that are videotaped or whatever, they can all go live on that platform.
Okay.
As long as they can meet the quality standards of the entire platform. That's really what we're looking for, is the quality, the content, and then able to drive that traffic. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, so we're going to have a lot of talk about off-air. But, so I seen on your IG, on your description, you said that you're an anti-motivational speaker. Like, what's the whole, meaning behind that?
Man, to me, motivational speakers are corny, bro.
Right.
Like, it's the hold your phone. Hi guys, you know, today I want you to believe in yourself. That's not my style, you know. I don't think motivation comes from scripted, non-emotional things. Like if I don't call myself a motivational speaker, because I don't want to be placed in that category of somebody who always has to stay and has to do the right things.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? When you become a motivational speaker, it's like you gotta voice perfection. You know what I'm saying? You gotta show perfection. When I'm an imperfect person, you know what I'm saying? I'm very, very imperfect in a lot of ways. So, you know, for me, I call myself the anti-motivational speaker, is because people say, oh yeah, you're very motivational, but you're not getting the same motivation in the same way my motivation comes from action.
Right.
You know, saying, yo, get the fuck up off your ass. If you want to make something happen, you need to go take action. And this is the action you need to take if you want to make it to this level. Not, you know, what you get it. You get so many motivational speakers who just sell a product. We're just trying to sell, oh yeah, now go buy my book, or oh yeah, go listen to my podcast, or yeah, go do this. But they don't ever give solutions to the problem that they present. They tell people, hey, if you want to be a singer, just get up and go do it. Okay, great. Thanks for telling me that I can get up and go do it. Every human knows they can get up and go do it. Most singers don't know what the first step is to getting up and going to do it.
Right.
Most podcast people, or most entrepreneurs, or, you know, fitness people who are trying to get buff or want to be healthy, they don't know what the next step is.
Right.
So for me, I'm not a motivational speaker. I'm just a person who's going to hopefully guide you to the next step. If you want to be more healthy, or you want to be an actor or actress, whatever it is, this is the steps. And I'm going to be real with you about it. I'm going to give you the actual game to get it done. Not just try to pretend to motivate you so that you can feel good for 2 seconds and then stop. No, I want to get you through the whole process. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So,
I mean, that's why I fuck with Gary Vee. Gary Vee is someone who, like, I was reading his book. I'm still reading it. Like, for me, when I read, I don't like to rush. I like to, you know, sit down and really analyze it. And Gary Vee, this man already knew about what was going to happen with TikTok. So I'm like, because I think it was Musical.ly before it was TikTok.
Yeah.
And he was basically, like, in the book, he basically telling people, like, you know, giving them the instructions to how to grow your brand, grow your business. And I'm like, for me, I'm like, all right, what's my weakness for my podcast? The main weakness for my podcast is the video. I need more video, because everyone who I interview and whoever who listen to my show, they always tell me, like, man, like, your content is real good. You know, your show is really good, but you need video because it could blow up. And, you know, thank God, you know, once you have connections and stuff, I found the studio down here where I can do it. But because of this virus that's going on, like, it's a lot of setbacks and stuff. And so, but, like Gary Vee is someone who I look up to that's, like, he's a motivational speaker, but he's not that typical person that go on YouTube and be like, oh, buy my book or buy my services for $60 just to teach me certain stuff, and I can do this on my own, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's what I feel about motivational speakers. They always have a funnel. It's always a click funnel.
Mm-hmm.
They want to motivate you, then they want to make you feel some type of way, then they want to sell you some shit. That's not motivational to me. Like, if you're here to be a positive person and motivate and do stuff for other people, then if you have this knowledge, your knowledge should just be spread. And what you'll find about a lot of other motivational speakers, they're not even living the shit that they claim that they should be doing. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, they're saying, you know, talk about being positive and how to make money and how to... They don't even have any money. They don't even live a positive life. They don't even have the half the things they're trying to preach.
Right.
They're just trying to give off this facade of energy to make people feel some type of way so that they can go do and make them rich as motivational speakers. But the thing is, for me, is I don't need to motivate you to make money.
Right.
I already got that. I got the businesses. I got that. So now, me just giving my natural energy, me just being a genuine person, is just an extent of my life that I'm at a free point, that I'm at a point where generating revenue, I don't need you to buy my book or go listen to my podcast. For me now, my podcast, my book, my audiobook, those are just free things. I want you to have them. I want them to be gone here when I'm gone as a part of my legacy that helps other people. But it doesn't cost you anything to go engage in. I already got that. I got my products. You know what I'm saying? These motivational speakers are using motivation as their product, when motivation should be a free thing. If I learn something and I want to teach you, I shouldn't have to charge you for it. Right. Yeah, that's a part of a lot of people's game. Is you know, the knowledge isn't always free. But for me, I feel like my knowledge is free. Mm-hmm. If I choose to give it away, it's going to be something free to hook you into the person that I am. And if there's a product behind me that you want to buy, that's cool. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I'm not going to charge you for the game. The game, do what you want to do with it. Most people won't even know what to do with the knowledge I give them anyway. So that's how I look at it. You know what I'm saying? It's just, it's how you choose to, how you choose to live your life ultimately. And I don't knock anybody who's motivational. You know, I got friends who are motivational speakers, and I call them corny all the time to their face. I tell them what's up, you know, like, hey, you should probably create something else. You know what I'm saying? Because you don't even live the... I tell them, but I'm not knocking anybody for the lifestyle that they live. It's not, you know, it's not my place.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, like, you know, I'm like, I tell people all the time, if you really want to have like a motivational speaker, just go on TED Talks for an hour, 20, 30 minutes. You'll literally like, you'll be like, all right, dang, all right, I know what I need to do. Okay, so I'm gonna do this. Like, you don't need to pay, I don't care if it's $10, like, you don't have to pay no one just for you to, you know, do what you want to do what you want to love and stuff that's going to eventually going to make a living for you and your family. I totally agree with that.
That's the thing. It comes from a place of realness too, man. It's like a lot of people, you know, are trying to voice or trying to give off this perception that their life is something that it's really not, you know, especially in the early ages. And I get, you know, fake it till you make it type stuff. Mm-hmm. But like, there's just certain things. Like, I could have did this meeting in a suit and tie, but this is not how I come to work. Like, for real. Like, let's be real. Like, most days I'm in here in a hat and a t-shirt and some sweatpants or some jeans. Right. You know what I'm saying? Unless I got a big client coming in. You know, I don't choose to give off perfection. Right. You know, my beard snappy or you know, whatever it is, what it is. I'm going to try and be as professional as possible,
right.
but life is life. You know what I'm saying? If I didn't have time to shave, I just didn't have time to shave. Mm-hmm. I'm going to still give off who I am, though, through every aspect of what I put out. And that's why I like doing podcasts. That's why I like doing interviews and doing stuff like this, because I'm trying to show and I want to show people that you don't have to be a fake Kardashian to make it. You don't got to put on that bullshit. You can literally be a real person. You don't got to wear all that makeup. Or put on your best suit just to do an interview. Just be yourself, and people gravitate to that more. Like right now, my computer's dying, and I'm sitting here trying to click the button to turn the shit on down here.
that's real though. Like, you know, when Will Smith came on social media and the things that he's doing, he's literally being himself. You know, he's telling people his story about, you know, giving him his data, like how he is with his family, how he is when he's filming different movies and whatnot. And like just lately, he was just talking about how him and his family's quarantined. And just gotta just be yourself. You ain't gotta be this person to try to.
He's one of my favorite people.
Yeah, like.
He's one of my, yeah, I mean, sometimes he comes off corny to me too, but at the end of the day, he's still one of my favorite people. That's out there, you know. I grew up watching Will Smith and who he was, and I thought that was an amazing person. You know, he's not. Yeah. We're so different in a lot of ways, you know, in a lot of ways. But at the same time, he's still. I like his energy and just who he is. You know, but you know, we all. I think at one point I aspired to be like Will Smith. You know?
Right.
But he was a good role model growing up.
Yo, he was all out, bro. He was like our uncle.
Yeah.
So speaking of your pod book, let's go into it. It's called Guidelines to Get Off the Sidelines, and we were just talking about you and your anti-motivational speaker. But like, to this pod book, like, what made you want to come out with this pod book?
It was a long time running, man. I think for me, I wanted to put out something that was real, that was who I was and who I am, like a a timestamp of who I am right now and what I'm thinking. Every episode that I put out, they get edited down within a week, and they get put out a week from that day. Yeah. I'm not writing next month's episode right now. I'm maybe coming up with the concept and the idea of what I want to talk about, but every one of those, I sometimes don't even do key points. Mm-hmm. It's just me jumping on and talking about a specific topic and how I get through those situations, about how I have made it to this point or what I'm trying to do to make it to the next point. And that's what it comes from. It just stems from an ongoing audio book that has, you know, just different layers and levels. And like I said, to make sure that when people are engaging or listening, it gives not only the problem, but the solution. And anybody who listens can say, oh, I walked away knowing now a different technique to apply into my life that can potentially make my life better. And so that's what made me want to do it, man. It took me a long time because I was thinking about, oh, maybe I just write a book, or maybe I just do a podcast. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to do a pop-up. I wanted to be the different. I didn't want it to be just on
audio, Audible. Yeah, Audible.
Yeah. I didn't want it to just be there because I'm missing out on a whole community. Mm-hmm. A lot of our community members don't listen to Audible. They don't listen to audiobooks.
Mm-hmm.
But they do have Spotify. They do have iTunes. They do have Apple Music. So I wanted it on those platforms. So that's why it has to be a podcast. But I wanted it to be in the structure of a book, of an audio book. So that's why there's the pod book side of it. Now, yeah, technically they call it a podcast because of the way it's released, but there's no rules to this shit. Like,
yeah, there's none.
You know, I call it what I want to call it, and that's what it's going to be. You know, so.
Yeah, I see even with some DJs I've seen, they actually do mixes. You know, on the podcast, but they speak, but then they be like, all right, we could go and play this artist, which is smart. And I'm like, man, I could have thought about that, but with the whole pod book, you know, I'm gonna listen to it though. By the way, I'm gonna start listening to it, and I'm gonna, you know, give you my feedbacks and tell you how what I learned and stuff. I feel like it's a great idea because even with I don't like, it's weird because. In our generation, I remember when I was in the third grade, that's when they were just introducing the audiobooks. And I remember hearing the Harry Potter book, you know, on the audio version. And it was dope, but I'm like, I'd rather read the book, you know what I'm saying? And have that experience. So with Shu, you was basically like, you know what? A lot of people ain't going to want to listen to the audio, but they want to listen to the podcast. Like, y'all listen to the podcast, so it's like, it's a book, but it's a podcast, so it's a vibe.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, you know, a lot of podcasts don't always have a point.
Right.
And I wanted every chapter to have a point. You know, they're short. I think they're 14 minutes a piece. The two that are out right now are 14 minutes. I try to keep them all under 15 minutes. So that means that's like a drive to work. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That's like, you know, for most of you, that's a drive to work or half of a drive to work. So you can get 15 minutes in of listening to this, and you get 15 minutes in on your music or whatever else you like to listen to on your way to work. That's kind of how I see it. Keep them short. Try to cram as much good information as I can in there and really get my point across. But my point might change.
Right.
And that's another reason why I didn't want to write a book, because every day I'm learning something new. And what I learned yesterday and wrote a book about might change, and now I got to release a whole new book. Well, in this situation, all I have to do is say, like the last one was called Perspective. If my perspective changes next week, I can now release Perspective 2.
Right.
And say, hey, this is my new thoughts. This is what I've learned now, and now this is what I'm spreading to you. You
right.
guys tell me what you think, kind of thing, you know? So that was the whole gist behind that, and the whole purpose behind that is to, I don't know, just deliver content in a different way. It doesn't always have to be the same, and maybe I am still missing people, but I'll figure out how to get to them as well in a different way.
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of the generation, you know. Social media is a blessing and a curse, but I look more as a blessing, because especially in situations like this where, for me, honestly, you know, there's a lot of people who are going through a lot with the virus, you know, any type of devastation, you know, pandemic. But, you know, for me as a businessman, as a creative, it's like, all right, you know, let me reach out to the people that I would never even think of that want to, you know, come on my platform because I'm still up and coming. So, you know, like having yourself and having, you know, other people in my local neighborhoods, and then have like influencers, you know, come on the show. It's just, you know, it's dope, you know. At the end of the day, we all the same people. We all want to interact, you know. We all want to have a regular life. It don't matter if you poor, if you middle class, if you, you know, up in with that 3%. We all want to have the same goals. We just want to have a great, peaceful life.
Yeah, exactly. No, 100% agreed. Yeah, that's the same goal for everybody. And if we all treat each other in that direction, you know, so many people get upset with each other over the tiny little minuscule bullshit that happens. And it's just like everybody's trying to get their own way, man. They all want to live peaceful in their own way. And so that's why I just let people let them do what they want, man. You know, so.
Exactly. So we got two more questions before we end the podcast. One of them is, I guess, what's your top five moments so far as like, you know, I guess I want to say all together, like being an agent, having your own distribution company, having your own, pretty much your own book, your own, you know, pod book. Like, I guess, like, if you could break it down to like top five moments so far in your career.
Top five moments in my business career.
Yeah, business career, yeah.
Shoot, I think it was a great feeling when my license came back as an agent. I was 22 years old, or 21 years old, 21, 22, something like that. So that was an amazing feeling that kind of put me on the track that I could literally, I knew I could do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, meeting my business partners, man, I have some of the best business partners on the face of the planet who've invested more into an idea that really they just believed, man.
Mm-hmm.
I started the company with just me and my best friend at first, and then, you know, things happened and we went separate ways. He's still one of my peoples. But and then I met Martin Owens and Sean Harper and Drew Nolmeyer. Drew, you know, that's one of my boys, one of my ride or die. Martin, one of my ride or die. Like, these are guys who've just been riding with me through everything. So it didn't happen at one point, but I could say probably the year, what was it, 2016, was an amazing year for us. We built our first studio and office together. I mean, literally built it ourselves from the ground up. So I could say probably in building that office was one major career highlight for me. It took me from agent with nothing to agent with something to offer the world. And it gave me the confidence to know that I could move to the next level and I could continue to develop. From there, I would say working with Trinidad Cardona, people connect his career and my career together a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so, to be honest, you know, I've worked with a lot of artists and I've seen a lot of artists succeed, but working with Trini was a real eye-opener experience for me, you know, and it seeing just how the industry worked. And because of that, it changed my mentality towards the industry 100%. Mm-hmm. Seeing what happened to him, how he was treated, what was necessary for him to do to succeed, the things that he did do, the things he didn't do correctly, all of that, it's a major learning situation for me, being able to fly. You know, it got me flown to New York, it got me flown all over the place, working with different labels who wanted to hire me and do little things like that. I mean, I've had a lot of clients go through that process, but Trini was one of the very first ones
mm-hmm.
that I got to experience that with music. You know, I did the same thing with, like, other people, and actors and actresses, but never in music, in sports, but never in music. So that was a big turning point for me because music was my passion.
Right.
Then I can say, like, we're getting into the most recent things, is changing my company name. Mm-hmm. You know, GPME, we were GPME for 6 years. And it was very, we had put so much together, t-shirts and banners and billboards. And I mean, GPME was a shield, and we made a shield. We had so many things in GPME and invested in the name. But last September, changing my company name from GPME to Resist was a very, it was nostalgia. I try not to be nostalgic about things, but mm-hmm. that was my name. My brother helped me create that name. You know, it stands for Global Phenoms Marketing Entertainment. And the name Phenom was something that was a word that he would use in his gamer tag. And I asked him, I said, you know, I was probably 20, and right. he was, 13 or so. And I said, what's a phenom? And he told me what a phenom was. And I was like, okay, that's going to be the name of my company. And he was like, okay. And so I literally did it. I licensed. I went and got the LLC and everything. So to change my name from GPME or Global Phenoms to Resist mm-hmm. was a big, big turning point. It allowed me to brand and grow and take everything to a whole new level. And so that's that. And then I think then the move to the new office, you know, this is a very strong turning point of, you know, going from 3,000 square feet to 30,000 square feet, you know, and still developing and taking over more space. The whole building is 60,000 or something like that. So we want to continue to eat and make partnerships with the owners and stuff. So we're doing a lot of groundwork. Mm-hmm. But I could probably think of 10 more turning points that were smaller, but I think those are the ones that stand out most to me. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for a lot of those things. I wouldn't be at the level where I'm at if it wasn't for a lot of those things, especially the part, you know, meeting my partners. Yeah. Keys to the game is being a team. You know what I'm saying?
That's what I'm learning right now.
Yeah. The team is the key, man, and you got to be able to sell your dream the best way you know how. The reason why people have a hard time selling their dream is because building a team is because they have a hard time selling the dream. And for me, I don't want to say I sold my team, but they were all, I appealed to their interests. I appealed to something that they knew that they could also do, and we vibe well. You know what I'm saying? We have very little arguments, very little disputes, and we vibe on a whole new level. The age gap, which is not huge, but Martin being his early 40s, I'm in my early 30s. Sean is 40s, but that's a whole other thing. Drew being mm-hmm. in his 30s, younger than me. So we have that age thing where right. we can keep the energy going, and when they get tired, they know we still got it. Right. And then when I need, we pull from each other. Their knowledge of how, you know, Martin has been in the industry for so long and has done so much. He is an amazing mentor to build in the studio, amazing mentor as a partner in general. So just the knowledge that he has and the friends and relationships, team is everything. Without my team, I would be nothing. So I would probably say that out of all five of those, the most major turning point for me was meeting those guys, and I am grateful for them to this day. They rock with me from day one. Invested their time, energy, and money to allow it, trust. Oh, you know, mm-hmm. God, trust. That allows me to do this shit even when they're not around, even they know I'm hustling for us as a family. Right. And, you know, and that was the big thing. That's probably the most turning point, key turning points in all of that. So that's the business ones. I mean, I'm sure people are like, well, why don't you talk about your personal stuff? Okay. And that's a whole nother thing.
I mean, you can do personal too. Like, you know, like as I'm saying, like I'm learning from you. And you know, when it comes to the team, like I'm still learning that, still trying to figure out, you know, ways of building the team, you know, especially, you know, for my podcast, you know, everyone keep asking me like, what's your main goal? And I tell them my main goal straight up. I either want to be on satellite radio or I want to end up being like an ESPN mixed with like BET and MT, like that vibe, like Bloom, like it's like literally sports biz music. So, you know, that's one of my, you know, goals for the future. But But yeah, man.
Where are you at right now?
I'm here in Miami.
You're in Miami, that's right. I have a client out there, LV the artist, man. She's real dope.
LV the artist.
She's signed up, Flowrider's the deal.
She sounds familiar, LV the artist.
Yeah, she performed out there with Flowrider and all kinds of stuff, but she came from us out here in Arizona. But I'm going to say, you know, it comes from relationships and elevation.
Mm-hmm.
You got to continuously, the thing is nothing on this planet you can't do.
Right.
You know, Big Sean did it best. Nothing's off limits if it's on the earth, bitch. So let's get to work, bitch. That's his favorite line. That's my favorite line from Big Sean. But nothing's off limits. So it really just comes down to you got to keep investing in it, elevating it, and the universe will continue to open up doors where there were only walls at one point. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And shit will just continue to grow for you and grow. You'll be like, oh, damn, look at this thing. You keep elevating that quality and doors need to open for you because the universe has the choice but to give you back what you put into it, you know? So that's probably one of the biggest things, you know. I always say, you know, you gotta be grateful for your parents and for your family and your friends, the people you have. My parents were perfect for me.
Right.
You know, perfect, even in their flaws, they're perfect for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my mom's loving but toughness, you know, her ability to say, yeah, here's some money, I'm gonna loan you some money for your business, but then also at the same time say, get the fuck out of my house. You know what I'm saying? Like, so she has like those two sides that, you know, so it was good. My dad, you know, I don't know if I'd be the same if my dad was more, if he was super active in my younger days.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I think we became great. We built a great relationship right as I, you know, became an adult and as a man, I could relate to him more. So, what all this comes down to say is basically, you know, accept everything that's been done in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Look back for the benefits. You know, I could have always say, man, I wish my dad was there more, showed us my football games. I would have been a better baseball player, whatever. My dad, he did what he could. And I think, you know, at this point, you know, we have a different relationship because of what happened in the past and what he's been able to learn from and grow from. We all have to learn and grow, and he continuously learns and develops and grows. He takes all insight to become a better person.
Right.
So, but now, you know, he's a person that I can lean on and talk to about damn near anything, and that's one of my favorite parts about him. You know, my mom being the way she is, and now, you know, growing into this new person, you know, bringing on a little girl into my life and all the other things, you know, develops me as a person of who I want to be. That's probably my most recent, you know, milestone is being an active figure in someone I choose to, you know, in like an adoption type sense. But I love that part. I love being a dad, and by choice, you know what I'm saying? I didn't make a mistake. I chose to say, like, I want to be a dad in this person's life.
Right.
You get choices in life, man, and we just get to grow from them and become who we want to become, and learn from our imperfections in the business and in personal. And you have to continue to outline your imperfections and continue to make sure that you're trying to perfect them the best way you can at all times.
Exactly.
All times. Whole job.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, exactly, man. Like, you know, this is one of my favorite, you know, interviews. You know, I just want to let you know, like, you put a lot of gems out there. And you're right, like, we just have to, you know, continue to push forward. You know, for me, you know, I'm about to have my first child in August, so.
Congrats.
Thank you. So it's just like, you know, for me, it's like, you know, it's that nervous feeling, but it's that nervous feeling of, you know, I want to be that father where, you know, I'm going to be active, you know, in my child life, because my mom was like your mom. Like, my mom, you know, she ain't throw me out, but she was like, you know, growing up, you know, she'll teach me different things, but at the same time, she didn't, like, you know, put her foot off the gas. Like, she still, like, pushed me to do good in school. You know, even when I was doing sports and everything at the time, you know, right now I'm you know, I'm a graduate student, you know, getting my doctorate, and she's still pushing me, like, hey, I don't care how old you is, what you doing, you know, you need to do what you need to do, because at the end of the day, you know, she was the main one who raised me, you feel me?
Right.
So it's just like, even with my father, like, me and him may not have that connection when I was younger, but now it's like, you know, whenever I have like a question about, you know, different things, especially like business, like I go to him, you know what I'm saying, and just ask him questions. But, you know, at the end of the day, like having parents and grandparents, you know, having, you know, uncles and aunts that's very close to you, and it's very important. You know, of course, I have my wife, you know, I have, you know, close friends too as well. So it's very motivational. It's very, like, you know, it's special.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I'm saying? So,
cherish those, man. Cherish those. That's going to get you through.
Exactly.
You know, those are the people that are going to get you through. You know, I always say, you know, having a kid can be used as a crutch against your goals, or it can be used as the fuel to get you to the next level.
Right.
And that's ultimately what I think Mia is for me, is she's a fuel for me. I want her to have better, and I want her to be smarter, wiser, and to be everything that, you know, you I want better, so I work harder. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't make me want to relax. It makes me want to go.
Right.
A lot of people say, oh, I had a kid, so I can't go anymore. Nah, you just got to figure that out.
Right.
There's times of me sitting in this chair over here where I got to do work or handle a meeting or whatever. You know, she's going to see that hustle. She's going to know what it takes to become successful on her own,
right,
or what a man should be doing to provide for her, because she's going to know that her dad was that way. You know, so that's important to me.
Yeah, that's what's up, man. And for the last question, I have a whole bunch of questions, but we'll have like a part two, you know, one day real, real soon. Where do you see yourself 5 to 10 years from now?
Oh, man. 5 years from now? Bruh. I'm over a millionaire. I'm definitely traveling a lot more. And spreading the same thing that I'm talking to you right now, man. This is my joy. This is my purpose in life. I found that, you know. That's why I don't take these things lightly, and I make sure that my voice and my message is heard or whatever. So yeah, you know, I'll be opening up these type of studios and this type of space all over, and affecting people's lives in different ways, building new businesses, and teaching how to build business to other people. You know, working on some nonprofit stuff that I have going on right now, and all the other things. So yeah, definitely 5 years. You know, I'm not even going to put a number, but it's definitely big things, man, independently. And then 10, you know, at 10, I'm 41 years old, 42.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, hopefully I get to work on a little bit more personal.
Right.
You know, I would hope, like, personally, I would like to be, you know, kind of where you are. You know, you got a wife, you have a kid on the way. I would like to be in that position. But still, changing the world through business, changing the world through mentality, and reaching out to new people, and helping people understand what their genius is, and bringing that genius to life. So, I mean, it's to kind of continue to do what I'm doing now. It's on another level, on another scale, and with more power, the power to change more lives and affect more people. You know, so.
That's what's up, man. That's what's up, bro.
And by 10, I should be a billionaire, though.
Oh, yeah, oh, 10. Yeah.
I should be in the Billies. I told my boy, I'm already coming for the Mario the Goat, just trying to be the Billy now.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
But nah, like, you know what you said earlier was true, real quick. It's not a lot of us, you know, that's doing the distribution companies, and even with the streaming services and stuff. It's not a lot of us, you know, not even in the buildings, not even, presidents, you know, let alone owners of these corporations. So it's just, you know, like for me, like, you know, being a Bahamian descent, and yesterday I was going through old stuff with my mom, and I learned that, like, you know, my family that came over from the Bahamas, like, they really was, like, pioneers here in Miami. So it was just, like, for me, like, I always told myself, I told my nephew one time when we was young, I said, man, listen, we gonna bring this family back to where it was, and we gonna not only gonna come back, but we gonna have longevity. You know, yeah. You know, it's sad to say, but in our community, it's rare that you see, you know, longevity. You don't have to be a man to be in there, but even having, you know, especially growing up down here in the South, like, learning that, you know, it was once upon a time where a black man owned, you know, owned Fisher Island, you know, island on right. South Beach, but, you know, people, I don't like to say sell out, but people, you never know what it was going through, but, you know, in my mind, is like, I wish, you know, now in this generation where, you know, we have social media, we have more, we more hands-on to different stuff, and it's more easy for us to create and just, you know, touch different things that we should be able to hold on to things for generations, you know, so.
Right.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, man. It's all about that legacy, man, and that's what we forget as our culture mm-hmm. goes. We think about how can we be on somebody else's platform, how can we develop somebody else's stuff, but we never think about, you know, how can we own the platform. Mm-hmm. You know, when you got a voice and you got a message like that, Jay-Z did it best, man. He said, "Look, I got all this music, this catalog of music. Why would I put it on somebody else's platform? Right. On my own platform." You know, okay, I go to the clubs, I drink all these other people's alcohol, but I make my own alcohol.
Exactly.
You know, so that's the whole concept. You know, it's just how do you own your own platform? You shouldn't be thinking about how to just make a podcast, but how do you give opportunity to other podcast makers?
Right.
You know, so that's the key. Yeah.
Yeah, man. You know, you have any shout-outs or recognitions before we close it up?
Oh man, I think I shouted out my partners earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, I gotta probably hit them all now. So I mean, actually, I can't do it. my people know what's up. They know who they are. Everybody a part of Resist Gang. Everybody that's a part of Resist Nation. All my artists. My entire family. You know. Yeah, it's amazing blessing to have all of them around. So, if I start one name, I gotta do them all, and that's gonna be a long time. And if I forget somebody, I'm gonna feel real bad. I've done that before, so no, can't do it.
But yeah, man, you know, I thank you for coming on the show again, man. You know, sacrificing your time.
Yeah,
you know, just coming on the show. You know, little old me. You know, but, you know, part two, you know, we definitely have a part two. And, you know, once all this is over, you know, probably, you know, link up. I don't know if you come down here to Miami or I go to out there in Arizona, you know, to the West Coast, you know, we could link up.
Yeah, man, for sure. No doubt. I always like to link up with people face to face, see what's up, and make it real. So, yeah, let me know. I definitely go to Miami, probably once or twice a year or something, so
okay.
I'll swing it out that way.
All right, man, let me know, man. Yeah. This be your boy DJ Anonymous with Sports Biz Music, the podcast, episode 118 with my boy Christian, and we out.